I lost the handle. I was on my way. It was a layup. I was coming down the court. I had numbers, and I lost it.
You would have been better off if you had been able to make it, huh? If you had made it.
It would have been a lot better had I made it.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 204. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune joins us to tell us what we should expect from Tanner in Friday's game. He also shed light on BYU's defensive struggles, why he thinks this year's D is better than last year's D. Matt and I then recap East Carolina, preview Cincinnati, and continue our ongoing discussion of what exactly is a Bearcat. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Follow us on iTunes and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, frequent guest and friend, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. Jay, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me on, Adam.
Well, the first question, of course, that I'm sure everyone in the grocery store, Elders Quorum, wherever else you are, is going to and has asked you is, what are the chances that Tanner Mangum plays on Friday night?
Yeah, I would say right now they're pretty good. Talked to Tanner today. They practiced in the morning. We talked to him immediately after practice, and he said he feels a lot better than he did Saturday night. Said he's still limited as far as what he can do mobility-wise. He said he thinks it's getting better every day. The bot trainers have spoken positively about, his kind of range of motion and things like that. And so I would say chances are pretty good that he'll at least give it a go and see what he can do. Obviously, being a quarterback, he doesn't have to sprint much or do things like receivers or running backs do. And so I think he can probably give it a go.
Yeah, he obviously came back on that last drive, even hampered. It was a huge boost to the offense and helped beat East Carolina. As you talk to the coaches and about Bo Hodge, as you know, if for some reason Tanner has a setback between now and then or he aggravates the injury during the game, how comfortable do you think they feel with Bo Hodge? Or is he, because of his true freshman status and also maybe he didn't get a ton of reps so far this season in practice, do you think it'll still be a pretty limited offense if Bo Hodge has to play?
Yes, I think it will be really limited. After the game, Bronco pretty much acknowledged that Bo Hodge had been splitting time with Coy Detmer as the scout team quarterback, and then the other half the time, you know, with the regular offense, Basically, Jason Beck told me today, the quarterback's coach, Jason Beck, that basically Bo probably got less than 10% of the reps in practice, even though he was the second string quarterback, just because they were trying to, you know, they were trying to get Tanner up to speed, kind of where they were comfortable with him not getting, you know, the lion's share of the snaps in fall camp. So, yeah, I think it'll be really limited for Bo. I think they'll maybe see if they can use him to run a little bit more if they have to. I think that they spoke today about going back to some of the stuff they use with Payson, maybe a lot more zone read stuff, and go that way. But that's kind of down the road. Right now, from everything I hear, it sounds like Tanner's going to be able to play. So
that's good.
We'll see.
Yeah, that's good for the BYU offense for sure. One of the things that has helped the BYU offense, especially the last couple of games, is the running game has come back to life a little bit. And at the front of that, of course, is Algie Brown. You know, when the season started, Jay, with Jamal Williams being out and then Hine gets hurt, I think a lot of fans and folks that watch the team were afraid at that point that we weren't going to have much of a running game for the rest of the year. What are the coaches saying about Algie Brown and maybe some of the difference he's made in these last couple of games?
Yeah, they're pleased. They kind of knew what they were getting. He had some good games last year, especially like the Cal game after Jamal got hurt. So I think they're pretty pleased. There's a little, he's had a couple of drop passes. I talked to running backs coach Mark Atalaya today, and he basically said, we got to get Alvy to catch every ball. You know, there were a couple drops that could have been really costly. But other than that, I mean, he's been sensational. He's picking up first down. He's running hard, doing everything they've asked him. They've given Francis Bernard, a freshman, some carries, and he's looked pretty good, especially in the UConn game. I thought Francis was really good toward the end of that game. They're giving Riley Burke, freshman, converted defensive back, who's been moved over to running back. He's received a few carries, and he's looked pretty good. So I think all in all, they feel pretty good about the position. They still have Nate Carter there as well. And then, you know, when Adam Heaney comes back, I think it'll go back to being a pretty good unit overall. They are missing that one kind of breakaway speed back that Jamal Williams gave them. There's really not a guy on the roster. Well, maybe Riley Burke could fill that role that can explode and get out in the open and run for a touchdown. Alvy did it the other night, but I mean, there wasn't a defender within 20 yards of him. It was pretty amazing on that draw play. But I think they feel good about how the running backs are, the depth they have that has kind of been established now.
Kind of a pleasant surprise over the last few games for sure. Staying on the offensive side, Jay, a lot was made of these wide receivers coming into camp and in spring and then fall camp. And obviously Mitch Matthews, we knew what to expect from him. And Devon Blackman has kind of emerged as kind of that other threat opposite him. And Mitch Juergens is kind of that fire plug. The receiver that maybe a little bit of surprise in the number of targets he's getting and the number of catches he's had so far is Nick Kurtz, who I think a lot of people thought would be that number two option for Tanner coming into this season. And after one game, it looked like it was going to be just that. But he's kind of disappeared, isn't on the field as often as I think we expected. Is there something, is it just other guys are playing more? Is there something to that early season? He didn't try to break up the interception hard enough that got Coach and I upset? Or is this just a matter of this is who Tanner's comfortable and developed chemistry with, and that's who's getting the ball?
Yeah, I think Nick Kurtz, was in the doghouse a little bit, maybe in receivers coach Guy Holliday's doghouse as much as a nice. I don't know what it is. He just doesn't seem to be able to get open. He doesn't have great speed. He's got okay speed, but he has a lot of trouble getting off of jams at the line of scrimmage, that press coverage. Michigan really took it to him that way, and then the last two games, he seemed to be coming out of it a little bit better against UConn, and then we didn't see much from him against East Carolina. But, you know, they've got these other receivers, like Coach Holliday was talking about today. I mean, he's like, somebody asked him about Nick Kurtz. He said, well, who do you want me to take off the field? You know, you got Devon Blackman, who had a fantastic game. You got Mitch Matthews inside. You got Taron Houck, who's emerging as a go-to guy. You got Mitchell Juergens, another excellent receiver. So, and then they got a budding freshman by the name of Moroni Lualu Pudutau, who hasn't done much, but they rave about in practices and stuff how good he's going to be. So, you know, it's a deep receiving core, and there's a lot of guys willing to step up. And so far, Nick Kurtz hasn't, you know, kind of emerged yet as a go-to guy that I think a lot of people expected him to be.
Yeah. Well, let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. They've given up a lot of yards this year, though against some pretty good offenses, so there's definitely that. The first question, of course, is do we expect to see Harvey Lange back in the lineup for the game on Friday night?
Yeah, by all indications, what Bronco said yesterday and what Kelly Papinga said today is that it sounds like Harvey's going to be back. They also should get back Micah Hanneman, the cornerback who left the game early the other night. Had a couple of suspended corners, Michael Shelton and Jordan Prater, who should be back. Travis Tuiloma, the defensive tackle, only played 20 plays in his comeback from the knee injury against Nebraska. So they say he's going to play more. So it sounds like the defense is pretty much going to be finally intact for Friday. And as you already said, Cincinnati looks really, really explosive. So they're going to need basically all hands on deck to slow down the Bearcats. And it sounds like that's what they're going to have.
Well, as you look at that Cincinnati team, Jay, I mean, it's been kind of a heckle and jide type of team. Am I saying that right? I feel like I'm saying that wrong.
Jekyll and Hyde.
There we go. Something dyslexia going on there. You know, they're lost to Temple, but that's a pretty decent Temple team. Then they beat Miami of Ohio, who's not very good. But then a close loss to Memphis, who's a pretty good team. And then a win over, not a great Miami by their standards, a Miami, Florida team. But not a terrible team either. As you talk to the coaches, what do they make out of Cincinnati? And you know, could this possibly be a matchup problem for this BYU defense? Seeing that Cincy likes to throw the ball over the field, and teams that have done that so far against BYU have had a decent amount of success.
Yeah, the word you hear so far is dangerous. Their offense is, I think they're the second fastest offense in the country, averaging right around 100 plays a game. Kind of what BYU wanted to be like last year. BYU has really slowed it down this year, and I think they're like the 67th fastest or something like that. But basically they're saying Cincinnati is going to test us like we've probably never been tested before in the secondary, and that's not good news. BYU will probably play a lot of nickel, which is important that they get those guys back that were suspended last week. And then I really think they got to get some pressure on either Gunnar Keel or I think his name's Hayden Moore. I'm not sure exactly. He's the guy that came in for Keel when Keel had the concussion. But Bronco also said, you know, if you look at Cincinnati's losses to Temple and Memphis, those teams are undefeated. So they're the two
good
teams they lost to haven't lost yet. So, you know, they've played a pretty good, you know, they've got some quality losses, if you would call it that. So, yeah, I really think BYU is approaching this game with a really good degree of trepidation just because of what Cincinnati's been able to do offensively.
Now, obviously, they have... Wagner after that, then a bye. So there's going to be a lot of time for Tanner Mangum and others to heal up. Have you heard the coaches talk any about that, or are they reticent to mention any what-if scenarios with a decent Cincinnati team up next?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything of the looking ahead or anything, or saying, hey, man, if we could get through this game, you know, without Mangum, then he's got a lot of to heal. Everything I've heard is that they're going full bore. They need every guy they can, you know, to get to play in this game, just because the amount of plays that Cincinnati runs, and just because of, you know, what happened last week with East Carolina and how the Cougars kind of thought they had that one in hand, and then, you know, flip a switch and it starts getting away from them. So I think they're basically approaching this like it's one of the biggest games of the year, if not the biggest, just in terms of really how the rest of the season will go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get you out on one last question about this upcoming game and kind of a rest of the season piece of it. You know, at the beginning of the year, we talked a little bit about the defense, but people were enthusiastic about, you know, Bronco taking over that defense. There have been mixed results so far and a lot of injuries. Do you feel like this defense still has some upside with a lot of these young players? Or are we kind of got what we've got, which is a couple of really good players, and then after that, this defense isn't going to... No one's going to confuse it for the one that that had Kyle Vannoy and Ziggy Ansah on it.
Yeah, I think the defense is better than last year, which I think when you really looked at it after Taysom got hurt was one of the bigger culprits why they lost the four straight. I think the defense has improved a lot. I still don't think it's to the caliber that you were talking about a few years ago. I still think it's susceptible, as you know, Michigan showed and like UCLA showed in the second half, but I think getting Harvey Longy back will really help a lot. I think that position is just so key, and Travis Tuiloma. When you look at good BYU defenses in the past, they've had good guys up the middle, just solid guys like Lonnie Unga and Daniel Sorensen at safety, and Ethan Manimaliuna at the nose tackle. And so I think they're heading in that direction with the guys they got, if they can get them healthy. So I think they'll improve, but I would say still a work in progress. And I think Bronco would say the same thing. Still a ways to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. And with the youth on that side of the ball, there's probably some hope for the rest of the season for them to get better. Well, Jay, thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll, of course, encourage all of our listeners to go to the Salt Lake Tribune and read your coverage of the Cougars. Thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Thanks a lot.
So CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, I don't even know why I'm going to ask this question, because I know the answer. Number one, because we just talked about it. But number two, because it's you. Have you seen The Martian?
Have I seen The Martian?
It's a movie. Before you make some lame joke about a green alien dude.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it yet. Yet.
I saw it in 3D. It was spectacular in 3D.
Well, it actually happened in 3D, so it makes sense that you would want to see it done that way.
It's a fiction story, Matt.
There was a whole movement of people on Twitter, Adam, that thought it was a real story.
No, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Do you want to see the United States and the world push to go to Mars, Matt? Do you think that is a worthy endeavor?
I do.
I do too. Let's get there.
We got a ton of stuff out of the effort to get to the moon.
Plus, it's like just pushing humanity, man. Are we getting serious? I need to reel this back in. This actually sounds like we're being serious. Are we allowed to do that in the opening of the podcast?
Yeah, probably not.
So I will get us back on track, Matt, with this. Do you hear that?
Oh, there it is.
That's some Dr. Pepper right there, my friend. Ah, let's get a little drink of this.
That's ice in a cup.
Ice in a cup with your Diet Mountain Dew?
Yep, from a pizza. It's a cup from a pizza place in West Lafayette, Indiana.
Nice, you MBA, you.
Pretty
all
sweet.
Right, Matt, it's time to start off with the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, two teams we've talked a lot about this fall that are continuing to do awesome is the fifth-ranked women's soccer team. They continue winning. They've lost only one match so far this year. And then the number 14th-ranked women's volleyball team also continuing to win. I think volleyball has Gonzaga on Thursday on BYU TV, so check that out. There you are.
The Lady Zags.
Awesome. Yeah. So they're doing great. They're doing great, and we will continue following them. I hope it's sometime to have a player or two, especially from the soccer team, on the program. But we're working on that. So,
that'd be awesome.
You soccer fans, hold tight. We're working with BYU to make that happen. So, Matt, let's go into our segment called BYU Cougars in the Pros, or BYU and the Pros. I don't know. What were we calling it?
Isn't this the one? Aren't you supposed to have a soundbite of Goodell talking and people booing him for this?
Yes. And I totally haven't done that. Okay. I will commit to maybe possibly doing it for the next podcast. How's that?
Wow. That was really non-committal.
Yes. I learned the commitment pattern, I also now know how not to commit.
So do you resent it when you sense somebody's trying to use the commitment pattern on you?
No, I just mock them. I don't resent it, but I do make fun of them. If somebody asks me a will you question in a church setting, I will make fun of them. That's just a guarantee. I mean,
I just
come
say
on.
No.
Nope.
Whatever it is.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
No, not at all. So speaking of the commitment pattern, Matt, will you agree with me that Ziggy Ansah is awesome?
Nope. Yes, I will. Ziggy Ansah is awesome.
5 sacks in 5 games. Unfortunately, the Lions aren't having great team success, but Ziggy, I mean, if you take that over 16 games, I'm no mathematician, Matt, but that's 16 sacks, which is a lot.
He's on pace to have, like, a lot of sacks.
Yeah, he looks great. He looks great. He has become what I think the Lions hoped he would be, which is a pass-rushing specialist who can also do some other things. So Ziggy Ansah.
Unfortunately, they can't put anything else together, which is really disappointing.
Matthew Stafford is ruining the Lions' chances of winning as well as my fantasy football chances as well. So,
well, that is your own fault.
True enough. Wani Unga for the Giants, Matt, is having, I would say, this, he is the surprise of BYU players in the pros, this in the NFL at least, this year. 35 tackles, 2 interceptions. He looks good, and he's right in the middle of that lineup for the Giants.
It's got to be the hair.
It has to be the hair. There is no doubt.
Maybe I should grow mine out.
No, you shouldn't.
Do like a little Michael Bolton thing, you know?
Actually, yes, you should do that. Absolutely.
All business up in the front and on top.
I should tweet this out. I was with one of our other brothers at a Chick-fil-A and just recently, and we saw the most amazing mullet I've ever seen. The guy owned it, man. It was this like flowing, curly mullet down to like almost down to his butt crack. It was an amazing mullet. The guy owned it. Maybe you should try that.
I feel like it's a really bad idea for me. I should go for it.
You should do it. You should do it. I'm sure your wife will really support that. Your wife will.
Yeah,
really
I don't think it's
going
to fly.
No, I don't think it will either. Also, pro news: Tyler Haws in his first game in Spain. What is the name of this team? Rio Natura Mundus Obradorio. Crushed.
Isn't this like Friends of Basketball of Obradorio or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, something like that. They crushed Sevilla on Sunday. He had 15. Let's see. No. Where am I? Gosh, Jay Money, why are you putting in so much like about other people? I don't care about other people. I only care about Tyler Haws on this team. Let's see. This is boring for the listeners. Where's Tyler Haws? 11 points, 5-for-6 shooting, and made his only 3-point attempt. He also had 3 rebounds, 2 steals, and his assist, and did a good job in his opening game. So congrats to Tyler Haws and his basketball career in España. Matt, bad news for Jimmer Fredette. Keeps rolling. Preseason game 2 for the Spurs, he did not play. And many of the people he's competing with roster spots for did. Chances, I'm going to set over and under percentage chance he makes this team at 40%. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under.
Me too. It's kind of depressing. But Jimmer may need to go join Tyler across the pond. He would light up Europe, I think. Light it up.
Well, the good news is Europe is so small that he could stand in any country and hit a shot in any other country.
Wow, look at you. You're in mid-season form with these jokes.
You like that?
Mid-season?
You like what I did there? That one just came to me.
Mid-season form. All right, so Matt, let's go back to the college ranks and get out of the pros. And Kyle Collinsworth is awesome, Matt. Newsflash.
Yeah. Seriously, spoiler alert, he's really good.
Yes, he was named a Bob Cousy Award watch list finalist on Tuesday. That's today, recording this on Tuesday night. He's considered to be one of the top 20 guards in the country. There's another list I saw where he was ranked the 26th best player in college basketball. It'll be fun to watch Kyle Collinsworth. We've talked about this before, but with an actual inside game and other guys that can rebound, not sure Collinsworth's going to get as many triple-doubles as he did last year, but
yep,
we shall see. Our friends at Vanquish the Foe, and of course this also came from BYU Basketball, mentioned they've got new unis for the basketball team coming out. Matt, what do you think?
I love... You know, and that's these ones weren't included in this year, but the powder blue with the silver script, those ones.
Yes, yes.
So I love this new white one with the, I know it's just the royal blue. It's kind of, yeah, it's a royal blue.
It's kind of a throwback.
Yeah, the throwback. I love it.
Yeah, I love
don't
the throwback.
Like, what I don't like is the weird, on the other jerseys, the faded coloring on the sides and on the shorts.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it in the blue. I don't like it in the white.
I just think it looks,
I don't know. It looks weird. Nike's trying too hard on that one, but I love the throwbacks. I love the blue, and I'm with you. The powder blue, they could wear that every game as far as I'm concerned. I think
they should wear these throwbacks all the time. That should just be the new uni.
Oh, I would do it for a year or two. I don't see why not. It's awesome. We'll get to royal blue here in a second, Matt. Before we get off of that, we've got to mention it because he's a former quarterback here at BYU, but Steve Sarkisian was fired as the head coach of USC. Matt, obviously this is a rapid descent for a guy that was considered one of the up-and-coming coaches, and I heard Harvey Unga on BYU Sports Nation today express his support as another BYU alum. So hope for Steve Sarkisian that he gets his life figured out and then could get back to coaching football.
Yep, you know how I feel about Sark.
Yeah, I know. You've got a special place in your heart for that 1996 team.
They're a great team.
Yes, they are one of the best teams BYU's ever had. So, Matt, let's talk about some football. East Carolina, we beat them thanks to Tanner Mangum coming back for his third final drive of the game heroics. Basically, he is – do you think this was all staged so he could come and lead another comeback? Maybe he wasn't even hurt.
He's like, I'm just going to limp around a little bit, take a little break over on the sideline, ride a bike. Go into the locker room just to raise the tension a little bit.
Yeah. So, Matt, as we do with each game, let's talk about one or two things that we've learned about these Cougars that maybe we didn't know before this game. So I'll give you your first chance. What's something you learned by watching the Cougars on Saturday against the Pirates?
We're in real trouble if we've got to go three deep at quarterback. I think that Bo Hodge, he's got it in him. But it's hard, you know. You're the third deep guy all through camp and coming into the season. You're getting, you know, second string reps right now behind another true freshman quarterback who's had to take over for the real starter. I can't imagine he's getting a lot of quality looks.
No, not
and then
not
you
got to
come
week.
In. I mean that's just a tough spot.
And he had two dropped passes in his five or six passes that he threw. Two of them were dropped, which does not help. Matt, on that note, let's get to a tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
This is from Andre Hutchins. That's at @AC_Hutchins on Twitter. Andre asked, did the BYU O-line and running backs really play harder for Mangum than they did for Hodge? Seems to be a narrative for that final drive. Matt, do you think the O-line and running backs played harder for Mangum than they did for Bo Hodge?
You know, I didn't get that feeling, honestly. The offense looked a lot better, but I think there were any time you bring in the guy that not everybody's comfortable with, you can't have some drop off there. Now the team has had opportunity before Tanner Mangum came in to fill in for the injured Taysom Hill in the first place to get kind of comfortable with him. But I doubt any of those guys have spent much time playing with Bo Hodge.
No, and that, right. And that's the problem. I don't think it's
that's
a matter of effort.
Issue.
Yeah, I don't think it's effort. I think it's familiarity. You know, the other part about having a backup who has a different skill set than your starter is, you know, Bo Hodge is a running quarterback, right? He can throw. I'm not trying to say he can't throw, but, I mean, Bronco said it in his press stuff yesterday, is that he's more a Taysom-style quarterback. There's going to be a lot of designed runs, or he's going to run if he feels the pressure. So, he threw that terrible interception, but he's a freshman. I'm with you. I'm not saying he can't be a good quarterback. I'm just saying it's a massive drop-off. Tanner Mangum can make any, and, you know, scouts and the announcers who've covered BYU so far this year have mentioned it. He can make all the throws. Most freshman quarterback, quite frankly, most college quarterbacks can't make all the throws. So it's a drop-off. You are right. It is a massive drop-off.
Well, and the passes come in a little bit different between a couple different quarterbacks. You know, and if you've never really caught much from Bo, like the pass is going to feel different coming in. And there was some of that led to some drops, and there was clearly some miscommunication on reads.
Yeah. There's clearly some miscommunication, but again, all of that is to be expected. Certainly, because of just because this is a freshman quarterback. Matt, the thing I learned, first thing I learned was Algie Brown can get it done.
Yeah.
Now last year he had as a sophomore had 324 yards, 68 carries, didn't play a ton, hurt a little. This year he has 50 carries, 252 yards. These last two games basically is all of it. He'd only had 8 carries coming into the UConn game and obviously had some injury problems this season as well. He did things against East Carolina that I had not seen him do, breaking some of the tackles, but also a better reading of the holes and getting in the right spot. I feel much better about our running game going forward with him. And, Adam Hine comes back. Obviously, that will be a big deal. And Francis Bernard, I think, could be also possibly. He's had a decent season so far. Matt, disturbing on the statistics side, Francis Bernard and Nate Carter have had the same amount of carries, basically, 23 for Bernard, 24 for Nate Carter, who I had picked to be a big breakout player this year. Bernard has 129 yards, and Carter has 36.
Yeah.
I still, to this day, think Carter could be used in this offense. I think Anai doesn't know how. He wants to just use all of his running backs, kind of plug and play, which I get. It's a little easier on the offense. But anyway, the big takeaway, though, is Algie Brown is going to be okay. Matt, anything else you learned you want to talk about?
Sometimes we've got guts. The fake punt.
The fake punt was great. You've got an athletic punter. I mean, the thing is, amazing to me is that it worked. You would think in that down distance situation with a rugby player as your punter that people would assume anywhere between the 30s that a fake punt could be coming, right?
Yeah.
I would think, because most of the time you don't have a athlete of Linehan's caliber back there. He's got some decent speed and obviously, the guy knows what to do with a ball in his hands. But yeah, definitely love the guts. Love the guts. Another thing I learned, Matt, is we need all of our guys on defense or we're in trouble.
Yes.
The suspensions as well as, Hanneman, though I have my issues with him as defensive back sometimes, him getting hurt and obviously Harvey Longhi, that we need all of our horses in. This defense is not deep enough to be playing three or four or five men down. I will say it was good to see Tealoma. Gosh.
Tealoma.
Yes, thank you. Back in the lineup this week against East Carolina, he makes a very big difference. So Matt, let's keep on the defense. I'm going to throw some numbers at you, okay?
All right, what do you got?
So far this year, in 2015, BYU's defense has given up almost 6 yards per play. If that were to stay that way for the year, that would be the worst yards per play-wise, the worst defense that Bronco Mendenhall has had since he started at BYU. Okay? They're giving up 5.2 yards per carry, which is very uncharacteristic for a Bronco coach team. The passing deficiencies are not great. But they're not totally offline with some other defenses that Bronco has coached. The good news is we're getting more pressure on the quarterback than we have in the last couple of seasons. Matt, is the defense bad, or is this just a matter of we've happened to play some pretty good teams in the first 6 games?
I think it's more the latter. I think we've played some very good teams in the first 6 games. I think we played some very strong offenses. I think if you look at what UCLA did on the ground, that game alone is especially when you're talking about a sample size of just 6 games. Those type of performances are going to mess with those stats. I think as we look at the schedule going forward, I would imagine that these numbers are going to come back down into the range of what we've come to expect from a Bronco Mendenhall coach defense.
Yeah, I think part of the problem we have here is we have had no cupcakes yet. I guess UConn could be considered a cupcake. But we've got a bunch coming up. Obviously, Wagner, the numbers will be inflated. San Jose State's not very good. Fresno State's not very good. So you add those games and the defense will look better. If you look at the advanced statistics, actually, Football Outsiders likes our defense, has it ranked on their S&P rankings as the 33rd best defense in the country, which in the last few years we've been in the 40s. Their metrics say what we've said all going into the season is we thought this was going to be a better defense than the last 2 years. And even though the per-play stats don't show it yet, I think the advanced stats do. So, you know, we looked at Hodge. He threw an interception, but we can forgive that, right, Matt? I mean, this is kind of like when Christian Stewart had that first game when Taysom got hurt and came in and looked terrible, but he was good the rest of the season. I mean, Hodge wouldn't be that bad if, say, Tanner got knocked out. We feel confident that Hodge would at least be okay, or do you think, you know, we said big trouble. Does big trouble mean we're dropping two or three more games this year, or does big trouble just mean we're going to have a lot closer against some of these lesser opponents?
I'd say in a short time frame, big trouble. Over a long haul, do I think he's got the tools to get to the place to be successful, say kind of like Christian Stewart did? I haven't seen anything that tells me he couldn't do that, because that's something you only know for sure with time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think for now I'd have to default on confidence that he'd figure it out.
So before we leave the East Carolina game, Matt, we have one more tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
Again from Andre Hutchins, he asks, can we just all agree that Royal Blue is 100 times greater than Navy BYU Blue? That ECU home game looked so good. Matt, you and I know, are very much on record that we think the Royal Blue is better than the Navy Blue. Matt, do you still feel that that's the case?
I think the entire athletic department should change back to the Royal Blue.
I am actually 100% behind that.
I will go ahead and say the entire university.
I am 100% behind that.
They should get rid of all of it. But do you know what would still happen when we do that? Do you know what will still happen?
What's that?
The tan stripe on the TV graphics.
Can we please get rid of that?
It's never going away. It's never going to go away.
The thing is, what we're talking about is never going to happen. They sell way more merchandise of that Navy stuff. They were having to discount all the Royal Blue stuff when I was there this summer to get it off the floor. I don't know what's wrong with people. What's wrong with
you? But you know what's interesting? You do the Royal Blue game for homecoming, so you have all these people come back to campus and they want to buy, like, you know, their new hat, their new shirt. But then they're also going to the game and it's going to be a Royal Blue game, so now they're buying two shirts.
I know.
Two hats.
Marketing genius.
Making tons of, just rolling in the money, just reeling them in.
Reeling them in. Watch, a bunch of suckers. And do I own a full set of BYU outfits in both the Navy and the Royal Blue? You better believe I do.
I do.
You better believe it. Actually, but I choose to rock the Royal Blue if I've got a choice. I love the Royal Blue.
I wear my Royal Blue hat more. But on my polo, I wear the Navy. Not going to lie to you.
I wear the Royal Blue to work on Fridays, usually game day Fridays, and I'll tell you, I get a lot of comments. I won't share some of them, but it is rather bright, but I love it. So, Matt, let's talk about Cincinnati and the question that's on everyone's mind.
Wait a minute. We're at the Cincinnati game? We finally made it?
Yes. Hey, you're Cincinnati still on the punchline. Matt, we're not the only people that are trying to figure out what the heck is a Bearcat. Benjamin Criddle, that's at Criddle 21, who's on ESPN 960 there in Utah. He says that the Bearcat, also known as the Binturong, is a vivarine mammal from Southeast Asia, tree dwellers. Now, of course, they've got pics and things that are on there as well. Matt, what I have not been able to confirm is, indeed, is this animal the result of a bear and a cat mating? So I'm not sure.
The Binturong. Why aren't they just calling themselves the Cincinnati Fighting Binturongs?
I don't know, Matt, but Barry on Twitter, that's at BarryR13, he says he's got an interesting theory that we should consider here, Matt. He says a bear cat, mated offspring of bear and cat, so this has caught on, Matt, is actually an ROUS from the fire swamp of Princess Bride.
Wow. See, now it's a BYU party.
Yeah.
You know, once somebody breaks out a Princess Bride reference, it is a BYU party now.
Yes, it is a BYU party. And I'm looking at this picture that he has on Twitter, and I have to say, it does look like a bear and a cat made it.
Huh. You said it again. Why do you keep doing this? That time I said it on purpose. Oh man. I had all sorts of jokes I was gonna be throwing out there using that phrase. And you know what? I might sprinkle them in from here on out on episode 204 of the podcast.
Yes, you should. Is it 204?
Is it 204?
We're 204 episodes in?
I think we are.
Shnikes. All right.
We made it. I can't believe we made it this far.
Oh my gosh.
I know, seriously though, coming back to this this mascot conversation.
Yes,
the wheels
yes.
have come off now.
Yeah, well, that's,
coming back
that's
to this
common.
Mascot conversation. I'm just glad to know that the bear cat is an actual animal and it's not just something and this one's falling apart on me. Can we? I lost the joke. I lost the handle.
There's absolutely zero chance of me taking that out.
I lost the handle. I was on my way. It was a layup. I was coming down the court. I had numbers, and I lost it.
You would have been better off if you had been able to make it, huh? If you had
made
it.
Yes. It would have been a lot better had I made it.
Yes, yes. Okay, we'll leave this terrible line of jokes behind and go and talk about the Cincinnati football team. Matt, right now, and I don't know that we know which quarterback is playing, but they've got a freshman quarterback, Moore, who's looked pretty good in Gunnar Keel's absence. Obviously, we believe that as of today, Jay Drew said on this podcast earlier that he believes Tanner Mangum will be playing and take all the snaps on Friday night. Now, Matt, as we look at this matchup, here's what I want to talk about: is Cincinnati looks like Cincinnati, who we thought they might be. Their overall ranking is on the Macy College ratings, where they combine all the ratings, is 60th. Maybe a little worse than we thought in preseason, but pretty close. But here's the thing that bothers me, Matt. So they beat Alabama A&M. They kill them. Who cares? They lose to a Temple team that is undefeated and who the Macy rating says is the 24th best team in the country. They beat Miami of Ohio, though, who's rated as one of the worst teams in the country, and they only beat them by 4 points. But then they lose by a touchdown to Memphis, who's a top 30 team.
But in a shootout.
In a massive shootout.
In a 99-point game.
99-point game. And then they barely eke out a win against they've played both Miamis this season. Miami, Florida, who's not very good this year. And they eke that out. Matt, who is this team? At the beginning of the year, I picked this as the game to watch out for. This was our trap game, right? Middle of the softer part of the schedule, week before Wagner, and an offense that could put up a ton of points, which is still the case. They can put up a ton of points, Matt. But is this still a game to be worried about based on their performances against Temple and Memphis? Or do you think this just isn't that great of a team?
I just don't think it's that great of a team. I was pretty comfortable going into the ECU game. That was a little bit more of a game than I expected it to be.
If Tanner doesn't get hurt, we win by 21.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't think Cincinnati is going to be very good.
So, key fact to keep in mind, Matt, that freshman quarterback Hayden Moore, he, over the past 2 weeks against Miami and Memphis, he is 53 of 86 passing for 836 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 3 picks. He's looked pretty decent for a freshman quarterback over the last couple of weeks. Of course, BYU will be getting guys back from suspension and injury this week, so it could be a very different defense that Cincinnati's facing this Friday night than, say, even East Carolina was on Saturday. So I heard today on BYU Sports Nation that Cincinnati's defense was maybe, it wasn't the worst we'd played this year. Football Outsiders disagrees. They have Cincy rated as the 108th best defense in the country, which would be worse than East Carolina's, which is ranked 86th. So Matt, it's prediction time. With all those numbers bouncing around in your head, let's talk over-under. We're going to assume that Tanner plays. Over-under, Tanner Mangum passing yards, 375. Over-under.
Over.
I'm also taking the over. Over-under, 8 catches for Devon Blackman.
I'm going to go with under.
I'm also... No, I'm not. I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over there. Matt, which do you feel more comfortable with in this game? Do you feel more comfortable predicting, this is going to be a little different than we usually do it, but do you feel more comfortable predicting more than 45 points for the offense or predicting less than 24 points scored against the defense?
I feel more comfortable predicting less than 24 points scored against the defense.
Really? I feel more comfortable about 45 points for the offense. I think this defense is terrible. Cincinnati's defense. It's going to be, it's worse than UConn and East Carolina, which is saying something. How about, you know, tangent time? You ready for a little tangent? Dive in tangent lane?
Yeah, let's go. Let's get on tangent lane.
Michigan has shut out 3 straight opponents. Is Jim Harbaugh like the best coach in the country?
He's pretty good at coaching football.
Throw down the gauntlet, say to Saban and Urban Meyer, why can't your team shut anybody out? Anyway, I'm just amazed that after that Michigan game, I thought our season was over, and it turns out we may have just hit the buzzsaw at exactly the wrong time. You know what I mean?
Right.
The first game where he actually rolled out what he wanted to do. But anyway, so you feel better about our defense holding them under 24 than our offense scoring more than 45.
Well, let me tell you why I feel that way.
Okay, let's do it.
I think we're going to score a lot of points quickly on this team.
Yes.
And then we're going to run the ball a ton in the second half.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you may, especially with Tanner's injury, you know, he's not going to be 100%. They're going to want to protect him. And I think the running game is capable of doing what you're saying you want it to do. So, okay, I'll roll with that. I disagree.
Yeah,
with you,
I don't. But... It's not that I think their defense is going to slow us down. I think we're going to be nursing the clock.
Nursing the clock in the second half makes sense. Makes sense. So Matt, Vegas is kind of staying away from this game because of the unknown status of both Gunnar Kiel and Tanner Mangum, but the spread out there is BYU by 7. I think that's a ridiculous spread. I would definitely take BYU in that scenario.
Yes, I would definitely take BYU.
That spread is absolutely insane, and that's why I think Vegas is staying away from this, is because at this point it's kind of an unknown. So Matt, prediction time, what do you got?
Well, like I said, I think that I think we're going to score points quickly. I think the defense is going to look pretty good. You know, we've talked a lot about how good or what level we think the Cincinnati defense is going to play at. I also think that their offense is really going to struggle against what we will be doing defensively. So I think we score a lot of points. I think they score very few points. BYU wins 38-10.
I think it's going to be more of a shootout than you. I think we're going to have trouble containing their offense in the first half, but I think over time their offense will sputter in the third quarter. I am going to predict BYU victory 45-25. 45-25. But I think we're going to put up a ton of yards in doing that. So, Matt, before we leave this, I have to say that I found something on Twitter that I am very excited about. It's called I don't know what his actual name is, but on Twitter he's called @BYUStatsman.
So, oh yes.
Basically, what I've wanted to do, but I just haven't dedicated the time to do it, is what this guy has done, which is basically create a passing log. He logs each pass, how many yards it was thrown in the air, then how many yards they got after the catch, all that kind of stuff. So we have targets for receivers and all this other stuff, okay? So I wanted to throw a few stats of his at you to get your reaction to them, okay?
Okay.
So on passing downs so far this year, Tanner Mangum has his highest rating, if we don't include the six fourth downs, on third down. On third down, his completion percentage is a little low, but he's averaging 8.8 yards per attempt and has only one interception on third down so far this year, Matt. Pretty amazing, right?
That is pretty good. He's clutch.
He is clutch. And then, of course, on fourth downs, he is 3 of 6 for 115 yards, 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. So, but he knows what to do on those fourth down situations. That's the thing, right?
Most of the time he knows what to do.
No. Even the two interceptions he threw, it's fourth down. There's no reason to be like shy about throwing an interception. Hum it in there and try to get it to the guy. If it gets picked off, it was fourth down anyway, right? Sometimes I get so frustrated on a fourth down when the guy either gets sacked or he throws it out of bounds. And you're like,
actually, if you throw a pick and the guy gets tackled right away, that's better than an incompletion.
Yeah, that's why sometimes I sit there in college and pro games and I see a guy like throw it out of bounds on a fourth down. And you're like, it's fourth down. What were you afraid of? Giving the ball up? You're already doing that. You're already doing that. But one of the other things that I really liked that he had in his stats were, so he's got targets for the receivers, Matt. Okay, so our leading target guy this year is, no shock, is Mitch Matthews, 61 targets. But here's the interesting thing, Matt. He only has 30 receptions. He is by far the lowest. I know they throw a lot of high-risk passes to him with some of those ops, but he's basically only converting 50% of his targets. Okay. The other point to me is I absolutely love the yards after catch of Mitchell Juergens, which we kind of know, right? He leads the team with 138 yards after the catch. Pretty amazing, actually, when you think about it. Nick Kurtz, who we thought was going to be the man, he is not in the top three wide receivers so far this year. Matt, do you see that changing, or does it just look like maybe Nick Kurtz is the fourth or fifth best guy this year on this team?
You know, there's a lot of talent there at the wide receiver spot, but I do think that's going to change a little bit. One thing that, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit, is you see a different one or two guys kind of step up every week and have their week. So I think by the end of the season, it all kind of evens out. I think we'll have a much better idea of where Nick Kurtz fits in. But I think he's probably better than the fourth or fifth guy on that list.
Yeah, the thing is, Blackman has been better this year than I thought he'd be. So that's one thing, and maybe the coaches knew that. The other part is Juergens, and almost every announcer has said this, Matt, and it fascinates me because I just didn't think of it this way when the season started. Juergens is the spark plug on offense. He's a guy that can make something happen if you get the ball in his hands, because, you know, and he's not this big, tall guy that can go up and get it, but he really is. Like, sometimes when the announcers say it, I'm agreeing with them. Get Juergens the ball in space and see if he can do something with it if the rest of the offense is sputtering for a few plays. And it's, I don't know, it's that wide receiver core may not be as good as we thought coming in, but it's still a pretty good group.
Still, yeah, and Juergens still plays hungry.
Oh, yeah. Even with the scholarship, the guy plays like he's got something to prove, which I love.
Yeah.
So, Matt, let's look at the rest of the season and predict the rest of the season, as we occasionally do. So, Matt.
Occasionally
almost every week,
do.
Pretty much. So, both of us saying a win for Cincinnati. Wagner, you're saying a loss. I don't know why you're saying that, but that's been your prediction all year. So, not sure. San Jose State.
Seahawks. What are they? Aren't they the Seahawks? What
yeah,
are they,
Seattle
Wagner?
Seahawks. That's who we're playing that week, isn't it? San Jose State. Win.
Win.
Yeah, we both got them for a win. Missouri, Matt. Now, Missouri is not as good as we thought. Right now, the Macy College ratings have them as the 47th best team, which is worse than us. We're ranked as the 29th best team. Matt, I've been calling this a loss a lot of the year. Last time we did this, though, I didn't. I'm going to say we beat Missouri.
You know, I'm still, last time we discussed this, because you and I kind of flip-flopped
yes,
a couple weeks ago.
We did flip-flop.
And I'm still in the, I don't feel good about the Missouri game camp.
All right. All right. So you are predicting a loss.
It's a month away. I think, yeah, a lot can happen between now and then.
Fresno State, I think we're both predicting wins.
Yep.
Now, Utah State's interesting, Matt. They are not as good as we thought they were going to be right now. They're ranked as the 62nd best team in the country, which is way down from their preseason of 47. I still worry about this from a rivalry game perspective. Also, just the fact that it's the end of the year and you quote unquote have nothing to play for at that point because you're already would be bowl eligible in either of our scenarios, whether you beat Missouri or not. That being said, I'm still predicting BYU a victory, but I think it's going to be a tight one.
Yeah, I think it is a tight game, but I see BYU winning that.
Yeah, so I am predicting 10 wins because I love the Cougars. You're predicting 9 because you hate them.
I'd like to say I'm a little bit more of a realist.
Yeah. It would be remarkable after those two losses if we ran the table with a freshman quarterback.
I'll tell you what.
It'd be awesome.
So as we've run through this, I'm predicting a loss in Kansas City.
Yes, which
but,
is
you know
not,
what?
It's not ridiculous, honestly.
But I would not be any more surprised if we beat Missouri and lost to Utah State. But I think getting through these next 6 games
and not dropping
without one. Dropping one is that's tough.
It is tough. It is tough because every week, you know, Missouri and Cincinnati and Utah State are all quality clubs. They're not none of them. Those three are really the tests left, right? And at that point, you've got to. Those are teams that if you lost to would be a disappointment, but not a shocker, right? They're not. You know, if we lost to San Jose State, that's a shocker. That's a you know, the Fire Bronco guys will be out in full force after that loss and have a lot of ammo. But if you lose to Missouri and Kansas City, even on a down year for Missouri, that's not a terrible loss, right?
Right.
Hopefully we don't have to worry about that. Matt, we have done this a couple times. It's been a few weeks since we did it, but I'm going to tell me about, for the college football playoff, a team that you are really loving right now and then a team that you think you don't think it's going to make it.
I'll tell you, a team I'm really loving right now, and I've loved this team before, Ohio State.
Really? Ohio State was my opposite. I have them as a team I don't think is going to make it to the Final Four.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're going to lose 2 games.
Who do you think they... Oh, so you think they lose Michigan State and Michigan?
Yes. I think they drop both of those games. I don't think they're as good as last year. I just think it's one of those things where even with a lot of the same players, sometimes you just can't maintain that level of awesomeness like they had last year. And I'll tell you what, do you think Cardale Jones, who's struggled against some pretty mediocre defenses, what do you think he's going to do against Michigan and that Jim Harbaugh defense?
I think he's going to be better prepared.
I think he's going to throw like 4 picks before he gets benched. Though Michigan State's certainly beatable.
Throw 4 picks.
Yes, maybe. So that's the team you like. Who's a team that's kind of up in that top 10 that you don't think will be there at the end of the year in the top 4?
TCU.
Yeah, that's a pretty good pick. They're kind of the consensus number 1 in the Macy ratings, but I don't see it.
I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I feel like we've talked about this team already this season as well, but you know that they probably should have lost that Kansas State game.
Yes, they probably
they very
should have
easily
lost.
Could have lost to Texas Tech. They very easily could have lost to Minnesota.
I think Baylor's going to kill them. Honestly, I don't think that TCU defense will be able to slow Baylor at all, and I think Baylor's defense will at least be able to occasionally slow TCU.
Baylor sure didn't have any problem with Kansas this week, huh?
No, they did not. The team that I like right now a lot, Matt, is actually Alabama.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. After they lost, I thought, okay, this is going to be a year. They lose a couple and reload for next year. I think they got really ticked off, and they've been rolling. I think Alabama's in that top 4 at the end of the year. They win.
Well, you know, it's a respectable... I mean, Ole Miss is a decent team right now.
Yes.
You know, but you look down here. I mean, I just I don't know. I think LSU might beat Alabama this year.
No, no, I don't think so. Though they might. LSU is a very good team.
I don't know if A&M will do it, but
I don't think A&M will. The other thing, Matt, is let's just forget and never talk about Utah's chances to make the Final Four.
Yeah, I was wondering if that would come up. We're just going to choose to ignore it.
Yeah, we're just going to pretend it's not real. That's what we're going to do. So, Matt, it's been a show. That is for sure.
Sure has.
Next week, even though I know technically this is midseason, we're going to wait till after this Cincy game to give out our midseason awards and grades. We've also been putting this off for a few weeks, but we should have some time next week. We'll do some basketball talk, but we will also, Matt, you will get a chance to interview one of the only celebrities we've had on this show, which is Boston Batman.
Oh, see, I can't wait.
So think of your interview questions.
I can't wait to talk to Boston Batman again.
Yeah, he's it's hard to schedule him.
He's very busy.
He's a very
busy man. Yeah,
you can't interview him at night because he's out kicking the crap out of people in Boston. And but we've
and during
got him
the day
scheduled.
He's just grouchy.
Yeah, he's grouchy. He sleeps in. He's grumpy. He's got got two broken ribs and stuff. You know, he doesn't want to talk. So anyway, Matt, of course, we'll encourage everybody to go out and get all of their Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiceShout. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!